welcome everybody to another edition of the Gwintelligence podcast. Yes, we exist. I am David Marver of Change the Padres, joined by Padres Jagoff and Woe Doctor.
Yeah. Marver, it's nice to see you.
Yeah.
It's good been to be back. I should start been a countdown forever on how many days it's been since you've actually podcasted. I should count the number of DMs that have been sent and texts that have gone unanswered. There's a lot of, hey, I'm open on Saturday. What do you think? And then Saturday comes, and then I send you a message, and it's like, hey, man, I'm ready. I'll drive to you. You know, I'll even drive to Poway, East County, where you live. And no response.
Yeah, it's been a good probably 60 days and maybe 12 DMs is what I'm going to guess, 15.
I'd go higher. I'd go above 20. That. We can read them out.
I usually get a follow-up each time that says, Marver ditched me or something like that. So, yeah, I'm going to say it's more than
I mean, I heard prepared podcasts, when they do prep, they come up with segments. So we could do a segment where I just go review the unanswered DMs from the previous period.
That might be a decent segment for our prepared podcast. But, no, I've just been busy. Moved back, obviously. Bought a house. Sold a house. Quit a job, join a new job, bunch of stuff. So
you have joined the illustrious community of Inland North County.
Inland North County, yeah. San Alejo. I'm quite excited. I remember back in high school, this place didn't even fucking exist.
Yeah.
It was the landfill.
It was a landfill,
well,
and
your
then
house
the entrance
is on
to Questies.
Is on a landfill.
Excellent. That's great. Great to know. now. But, yeah, but obviously when I moved back, my wife's from Rancho Penasquitos. I'm from Carlsbad, so it's kind of like a nice in the middle, close but not too close for
it's the back way to drive.
Kids.
There you go.
Yeah, it is. And so my wife works out in Rancho Bernardo. She can take Elfin Forest and miss the whole 78-15 fiasco in the morning. So it's actually kind of worked out pretty nice. It's just been very hectic and obviously all the moving stuff, but excited to be back.
Yeah. I mean, you used needing to close on your house many times as an excuse, which – for those of us that have bought a house before, there's almost no work involved. You show up when the home inspector comes. Mm-hmm. You get phone calls about financing and the loan funding. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you literally do nothing. You sit there and you actually pay someone 3% of the home price.
That is correct when you buy a house.
To do all the work for you.
That's correct when you buy a house. But unfortunately, in my Delaware house, I had to fix the electrical. I had to call on people to remove pest stuff. I had to get the foundation certified from the state because it was a part of the house. It was unlicensed when it was added in the 70s. And long list of random bullshit I had to do for the Delaware house. For the San Marcos house, I just sat there and did not, like,
well, it's a new
Pacific
house.
Pacific Southern just did nothing. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's mostly a new house. So
I'm just glad that Leisure Fryer has something to listen to now.
Yes.
And he should be holding you personally accountable for the long absence.
I think that's fair. Yeah, that's mostly fair.
He's got a shit list and you're on it. You know
this. Well, I know that.
But at the very least, we can talk about our new current home for the podcast. We're sitting in a library.
That is a library.
At Urge. This is Urge, right? It's Urge in Common House in San Marcos. You may know the beer. It's Mason Aleworks.
Shameless plug.
Who is
wainscoting in here, by the way.
This is actually a nice
like
little.
This is a really nice area.
Yeah.
I should have lit up the marble countertops for you. They have lights underneath them.
Yeah, and we have this hockey
really
game
didn't
here
I didn't think
to play.
Oh, the bubble hockey?
Yeah, bubble hockey.
Yeah, the bubble hockey. Has a full-blown scoreboard, a replay system. Yeah, it's all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been told that it's important for podcasts to prep, right? And to also have some kind of brewery as a home base that we can frequently go to. And I think we've achieved that here.
We're coming for you, Zero Podcast.
I like this
podcast.
So we didn't do prep. So we didn't check that box. And also, we don't have segments. So, I mean, we are lacking on some things. We do not break news, or almost never. So, you know, we're lacking on some things. But that's part of life, right? It's constantly moving forward and progressing.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, the Padres have not been progressively moving forward. Let's touch
Dynamite
on the end of the
segue.
Season. I think, I mean, most podcasts have already done an end-of-season podcast at this point, but I think just to go back to what we expected at the beginning of the year, you and I were both, I think we predicted 71 wins. I think you went with a nice 69
wins. 69, yes. So you did go with 71? Because I actually pulled some research as best as I could without going through too many old podcasts, but I have the numbers for what many people predicted for the Padres.
Oh, what were they?
And generally, I mean, I don't think this is surprising. Sometimes we look at things with a window of optimism. You were obviously very pro Eric Hosmer coming here. I'm guessing you had thought he would have make more of a positive impact than he did.
Of course, yes.
You know, rather than being one of the worst players in the major leagues, which is something I alluded to when we did our Costa Rica podcast, where I was described as too angry about the signing. So I've got not that many. So I went back and listened to like East Village Times and Make the Padres Great Again. I could not find EVT's predictions, but I would have to assume they were somewhat bullish.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's tough to find them. You might have to use like a meta crawler to go through all 1,714 articles from April, but in March.
I scrubbed two full episodes trying to listen to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, you did.
And actually, we can talk about that in a second, but it was kind of interesting going back and listening to what we talked about at the beginning of the season compared to where we are now. But I do know that John Gennaro predicted 74. He's always the optimist.
Okay.
Craig Elston predicted 72. And your arch nemesis, Keith Law, predicted 68. And actually, that would make Keith Law the most accurate out of all of the predictions. What say you, Marver?
Yeah, I mean, I don't... Yeah, I mean, I think that was like right in line with Zips, right? I think Zips was saying 70. I think anywhere from 68 to 72 was a pretty decent projection beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some things happened that brought it down that, you know, you can't really necessarily predict for. And then once they're out of it or super early, you knew they were going to trade away bullpen pieces that add up to wins at some level. But I think in general, the thing that I always look at is before the year, you know, we might have said that, what, 3 years from now we could potentially compete for division titles and World Series, maybe 2020?
Maybe.
2021, 3 years from now. So you'd expect at the end of the year we would now be saying 2 years from now.
I was going to say the goalposts keep moving on that too.
Right. And so the whole point is that I don't feel like we're any closer than we were at the beginning of the year. And I would say the reasons for that, and I think all the people that would have projected the win totals this year, everyone knew they weren't going to be good. Even the most optimistic was 74 that you just read, right? But you would have hoped that like some of the young pitchers that came up, like Lauer, Nix, whoever, would have been good, right? Like any of them. I'm not convinced that any of them are like major league pitchers.
Well, Lucchesi. I mean, you could argue for Lucchesi.
Sure, I guess.
I would say that they're all, but all of them, even on like the most optimistic from what we've seen, are end of the rotation starters.
Yeah.
Or like swingmen, like, or like potentially cut down a pitch and you're decent in the bullpen. I don't think any of those guys have really convinced me that you've, I don't even say like the back end of the rotation would be solidified.
I mean, I say like, it's kind of just where do you see Lucchesi's top? I mean, like a three?
Four.
On a real playoff team, like, do you start him in a play? I mean, you probably start him in a playoff game, right?
I would.
To me, he's the not like the Porcello. What would be a good example for this? Actually, maybe you would.
What, like the Rich Hill on the Dodgers?
He's almost like an Edison Volquez, to be honest, because he like high strikeout total, high walk total, doesn't throw a whole ton of innings.
Well, and if you're not expecting, especially if we assume that this the new bullpenning is the new playoff structure norm. Maybe you do have him come in for like one or two times through the lineup and he just shoves.
Yep.
But I don't think you can depend on him for the rest of the season to go more than two, three times through the lineup. And so as a result, I don't think I would put his ceiling as like a three or a four. I say three is like super optimistic. And that's the best.
Like a Padres three. He's a Padres three.
I still see a scenario.
Like a decent one.
I still see a scenario where he improves. The only problem with him is he's older.
He's right. older he's than like he's 22. Doesn't have that third pitch, really.
Yeah. Relies on deception. Like, these are things that degrade.
Yeah. This is like what we heard about who? Like, Erlen? And look at what he's doing?
Yeah.
Well, he actually had a pretty decent year, though.
Out of the bullpen.
No, but see,
starting.
Here's the thing. True, mostly bullpen. So that's what I'm saying. Like, 3-4, end of the rotation was always the optimistic end of the spectrum there, I think.
And I think I wrote the one this week in Padres Twitter after my vacation in, like, August or July or whatever. But Lauer... I keep hearing people be like, you know, there's all this encouraging stuff. You brought up Lucchesi, which I think is great. I think he was a very promising, especially for where he was drafted and his prospect pedigree and whatever.
Yeah.
But they always include Lauer in that as like a real positive. And Lauer was good for the 2018 Padres, maybe. Good enough to be in the and that's not a compliment, right?
How old is he? I'm totally blank.
Well, I think he's 23.
He's probably 23 or 24, right? He was a senior, right? He was a senior draftee.
Oh,
so
I think he was 23. He'll be 24 next spring. Where
I mean,
he,
like he had that quick rise.
Year.
So, but. Yeah, I mean, he could still learn, and maybe there's something somebody sees
but
from
like the
that.
Thing
but
with
I didn't
him
see anything.
That's
that
so weird
out.
Is the velocity.
Yeah,
is all over the place, and he's greatly. Much better when his velocity is higher. But he's not very good when he's throwing 91, 92.
No.
He's just not very good, I don't think. I mean, what frustrates me is everyone focuses on the pickoff, you know, attempts. It's like, what, he had 12 pickoffs this year or something?
Yeah.
Impressive. It also means that there were a lot of guys on first base.
Right. That's the best way to get a lot of pickoffs.
I mean, if you take his stats and, like, you put them in, like, I mean, obviously in 2018, a whip of 1.6 or whatever, it ended up being 1.5. Pretty terrible.
Not
but
great.
Even if you put it in, like, 1998, like, the apex of the hitters, or, like, 99 or whatever, the apex of the hitting steroid era, those stats are still bad.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's got a lot of improvement.
You're the math guy, Marver.
He's a young guy. I don't know. It could happen, but what, did, like, you see anything?
Do you know offhand what the expected runs are for a runner on first? I mean,
offhand,
like, you could probably calculate how many runs he saved by picking those off. Like, let's say he had just struck them out in the first place.
It's a,
like,
good skill to have.
It's a good skill.
He's not John Lester.
Right.
Which is fine. But
it would be a great skill if he was a good pitcher also.
It's a great thing to eliminate the few runners he would allow as opposed to all of the runners.
I get the point
there.
You're making. Basically,
the horde of runners.
Take the number of guys he's picked off, and instead of adding those singles and walks, just count them as strikeouts in his bottom line stats and how much of a difference
it
would make.
See what the number of runs he would have given up.
I mean,
it wouldn't
have
moved the needle that much.
No, it won't move the needle much. And B, you're forgetting the fact that a lot of those are singles, which move other runners on, you know, base. So it's not – it's more than just what you have to do, but I just think it's a skill that's very ancillary and just, like, unimportant in general.
I mean,
it might be good for keeping guys from stealing second base, and I guess there's a small amount of value to that, but stealing base isn't that valuable anyways because, you know, it's a balance between getting thrown out and stuff. So
it's an elite skill, yes, but the value of that skill, or, like, how much you would weigh it.
Yeah, it's like – it's like if you're playing beer pong and someone's really good at cleaning out the water cup at the end of every game. You're like, great, and, like, fantastic skill, but that doesn't really help us win.
That's a great skill.
Yeah. Sanitariness is very important for beer pong.
It very much is.
Lauer's like a 5 for the 2019 Padres, right? I mean, if we're being realistic on the skill, he won't be a 5. They'll put him at 4 because they like propping up the prospects. But
yeah,
Who's the opening day starter next year?
I don't want to
Lucchese,
think about
right?
That. It's going to be
Kladick. What about Kladick?
Oh, man. It's going to be him.
AC actually surprised me in predicting that Kladick was going to be a non-tender or a cut.
That would shock
man.
Me.
It would shock me
with,
as
with,
well.
With all of the importance that they put in veterans and leadership, that would absolutely shock me.
But he's just
I don't see
so
that happening.
Bad, though. I think he might reach a point where he's just so bad that they're okay with him leaving.
Oh, what if you stick him in the bullpen? I mean, that's what he was before we salvaged him, right? A bullpen
guy.
Well,
so
still bad in the bullpen.
Looking to last year, so he did decently last year compared to our other options.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no problem with putting him as an opening day starter this year. If you use that same logic and carry it over to a new one, it makes absolutely no sense. So, yeah, non-tender, that would shock me incredibly because they still think there's value in that. Especially with all the Galvis crap that we had to sit through.
Oh, there's so much more coming.
Oh, I know. So, I mean, like, I would be shocked if that happened just because of the level of importance they put on veteran leadership. But if they put him as an opening day starter, they've basically set the bar super low on opening day. And they can't do that after they lost viewership, attendance, everything else. And they're getting like raked over the coals for how they basically treat their fans right now.
Yeah, so
well, they don't care about that.
They don't care about it, but I mean, that's even for them, that would be really bad.
Would you rather have Brian Mitchell be the opening day starter than
Craig
Kimbrel?
How dare you?
I would, yeah.
I would too.
I'm fine with them throwing Mitchell out there. I mean, if he don't leave him out there. I mean, if
he
blows it up.
Me on just like, watching him hurts me. It's so hard to watch.
The worst thing about it, too, is, like, it would have been one thing if they just stuck with him all year, and it's like, look, it's a lost year. We're just giving him as many innings as possible to figure it out.
Which totally
fine. Which would have
that.
Helped with the tank because we ended up with pick 6, which is – it just feels like a waste of a year to
but
be
what
that
if I,
bad.
Push,
what if I play
man?
Devil's advocate, though, and say the time off is what led to him being not terrible in September?
He was – the thing is he actually was still terrible in September. It's just the number of earned runs he gave up was lower because of randomness.
But that's what Jesse Agler and Ted Leiner
I mean,
– Right, I know.
If you're going to use game score as – I mean, like, I don't put a lot of weight in a game score or anything, but – you know, the one start they rave about for him to close out the year was only marginally better than his best start at the beginning of the year. So, I mean, that's great. It was an improvement by how much? He still looked terrible.
I mean,
and that was after getting his shit together.
Yeah. So. I mean, this ties in with Knicks, too, but it's hard to succeed when you strike out five or less batters a game.
Yeah, you have to walk like no one. But I mean, the thing with Nix is like I actually he doesn't walk
the cash quandary,
like,
you mean?
But he's getting like four. He's at like 4.5 strikeouts per nine. But and he's a power pitcher. Like that's a problem.
But that reminds me of. You mentioned Rick Porcello earlier. That reminds me of when Rick Porcello came up. The difference is Rick Porcello was like 20 and out of high school.
Yeah.
And was like actually like pretty good like 2 years in.
Well, that's the thing is like he's not young.
Yeah.
Mitchell's not young. This is not good.
People should not be referring to him as a prospect. He is not a prospect.
No, he is a guy that went through the Yankee system and they're like, well, we're done with him.
I mean, he was on the same Future Stars baseball card with Jose Perella. Like neither of them are prospects.
That's funny. That's a great card. Do you have that autographed yet?
I've thought about getting it, yeah.
You absolutely should.
Just say it's from someone else so they he knows how to sign it. You do what podcast? No, I'm not signing that.
Well, I'm just glad this podcast has made a statement that we want Brian Mitchell as opening day starter in 2019. We expect that.
You guys hurt me.
No, only above Clayton Richard. Richard is the very bottom, and then Brian Mitchell right after that.
Okay. Okay, I can deal with that.
I mean, to be honest, Nick seems like a guy who's going to get quickly passed over by new prospects that are coming through the system.
Yeah.
Like, he's like a Brett Kennedy.
He's
flashier
though?
Because he was drafted by Preller, I guess.
I don't know.
Well,
so
is Kennedy, but...
I do think that not walking a lot of guys is actually a pretty valuable trait. Like, it's one thing if a guy's, like, bad at striking people out and bad at walking people and gives up home runs. But it's another thing when someone's actually good at one of those skills, and he's actually good at avoiding... walks. Now that might be why he has no strikeouts, because he just throws the ball over the middle of the plate. But
it's also why they hit so many bombs off of him.
Yeah, that's true. That too. But still, at least it's a skill that's like above average. And so I'm willing to give him a bit of a longer leash than I am name another Lauer, for example, that was bad at every category, except for pickoffs.
I don't know. I mean, Lauer's lefty though, so he automatically gets a longer leash.
We have like 9,000 lefties. Don't
I know
we?
Every
like,
pitcher
we,
in the
we
system
need
is
righties.
Lefty.
Yeah, we need righties.
Well. To be honest, just from like an aesthetic standpoint, I hate walks and I hate guys that give up bombs. I don't know.
I mean, Jacob.
This is a nightmare.
As you said, Marbert, you didn't watch the end of the season. Jacob Nix was painful to
watch.
Oh
no, I watched. I said before the podcast started, by the way, that I hadn't really watched in September except for a couple starts, and they were the Nix starts. I tuned in just to watch them. They were painful. Absolutely, it was even painful. The game that he gave up like no runs or whatever. But struck out one guy for like seven innings,
it's
something
nuts.
Like that. I was like, this
See,
is a
hurts.
Very unconvincing shutout start, to me at least. So, yeah, the pitching staff is a mess. They're not going to be good next year because they're not going to be able to fix
all the guys that are coming
staff.
Up are the wave of the future. What, 19, 20?
Yeah,
right. I mean, I'm trying to think who the next guys up are.
That's what I'm
AAA
saying.
AAA is pretty much stripped, right?
It's going to be stripped for next year. The guys that they promote from, they could either make a big jump.
Well, no, you
or
got
or sit in Double A.
No, I don't know. I think you got Paddock.
Okay.
Paddock's
Paddock's
I actually think he's. I still think he's the odds-on favorite. I think the odds are maybe 15% to lead the Padres starting pitching staff in WAR next year. Because even if only if he gets seven
really
innings,
bad crop. Yeah,
because there's such a bad field that he has to compete against. He'll get two WAR in 70 innings. I think that'll lead the team.
Yeah.
Oh, you're really writing off Craig Stammen. Here. Isn't he the team leader?
No,
lead pitching WAR?
Lead the starting pitching staff.
Right.
Not
right,
the
good.
Pitching.
Craig Stammen can still lead the pitching staff in WAR.
But I think you got Paddock. I think Baez is reasonably close. But yeah,
I don't think he's that close.
Yeah, I mean he kind of struggled towards the end of the year. But I would say
he's young.
You don't need
to push him either.
Your Mackenzie Gore. I mean he had blister problems. He's not going to be up next year. Morahone.
Hey, they're fixing those baseballs.
Yeah.
Or no. Wait, they're making them worse for AAA. I can't remember which.
Morahone, he won't be up next year.
No.
And Patino, I think he needs more time, too. So I think, and Weathers, I guess you can throw in that group, too. He's obviously very young and low ball.
He'll
so.
Never make it.
Yeah,
who?
I mean.
Wait, who?
Weathers.
I think there's a.
He'll make it to the
time.
Majors because they'll want to say that the first rounder made it to the majors. But
I think the jury is still very much open on him. But the
earlier
returns
like
were not great.
He's the 10th pitcher in the system. Like.
I think that's more a reflection of the system, though.
It is, but that's a real problem if you want to make the majors.
Yeah, good point.
I don't know about that. I think if you wanted to pick nine more pitchers, I'll take... I think he's probably like sixth in the system at this point. But, yeah, in any case, they're all low level except for Paddock, I think, is the most reasonable guy to get called up next year. And he'll be good, and he might be a top of the rotation type guy. But that's really all you have.
You
in your
swap out Kladick and you add Paddock. You're talking about adding two runs, right? Or two wins.
Yeah,
to the
two
team.
To three.
Like
wins.
It's not a thing that's going to turn the team around. Like I think
I'm actually interested to see Paddock with Lucchese. It's like you've got two pitch guys, right?
Yeah,
that's essentially what that is. That'd be kind of fun. I mean, if you're talking about as far as use of the bullpen and how to get Weathers in there, that's your way right there. You have two guys that rely on two pitches and they have the best stuff. You have them maybe sitting 2-3 in the rotation and hope some guy really strikes it big.
Yeah.
Like the, I don't know. Like
I mean,
some,
the big
some
guns,
guy
Patino,
yeah, the, big
you know,
guys.
The hard
yeah,
throwers,
exactly.
Patino.
Yeah. So, I mean, like maybe that's your way to get him involved in there, right? I mean, like he might be further down, but you have an increased role for him because these guys, you want to maximize their effectiveness and maybe get him out of there earlier.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how well that would work as far as, like, will the pitchers buy into that or anything?
I think I'm sure under the leadership of Andy Green, they'll Jesus. All want to do that.
I think if you're
that. Okay.
He's a leader of men.
He's no Bud Black.
How about Denelson Lamet? We expect
him
back at some point in time. I mean,
did you really ever buy into him as number one though?
No,
not as a number one.
He's another two. He's another two pitch guy. Though.
Yeah, but he's actually pretty good. Like I think he's definitely
he's developing that.
He's definitely at least a three.
So I mean,
I would say he's at least a three. And we don't
actually
have one of those.
I mean, if you think about it though, he actually had a more more developed third pitch than any of those other guys.
He did, yeah.
So that's the thing. It's
the only thing. Also, first and second pitches.
Yeah. Well, yeah, totally. But I mean, like that third pitch is something that the other guys don't have developed.
Yeah,
they're just excelling at lower levels. So it'd be really interesting to see with those three guys. Maybe you have those guys 2, 3, 4. You just have to get. I mean, obviously you have to get that ace is kind of a big problem. But
I mean, this is also
why
you pay
comfortable with that.
I mean, it's also why you pay Darren Balsley money, right, to help these guys.
Apparently, yeah.
Well,
apparently,
I heard he's the best pitching coach in baseball.
Right, yeah. But I mean, if he actually is good, you would expect that he would improve pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with
Lamet, ancillary pitches when they get to the major league level.
His ERA, but he's a 4.6 ERA in like almost a full year.
But strikeouts and you know,
I know
and
he
whatever.
Has like good peripherals. Like I mean, strikeouts are great, but he's walking over four a game.
But he's still young.
He's not like I feel like a lot of fans were like, let's pencil him in as the ace.
Oh yeah, that was way premature.
And now he's coming back from arm surgery or you know shoulder surgery or whatever elbow whatever it is.
That was more of like a reflection of what the
where we were at.
Was.
But
so
I think a lot of people. I heard ace thrown around a lot.
But I think he's
Lamet.
A legitimate middle of rotation.
I don't know
guy.
If that's what he is.
No.
In middle of the rotation
it's
is
what
fine.
Everyone wanted
it's
him
with
to
upside.
Be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's
I think,
fine.
Yeah.
I think you can go back and look at some playoff rotations in the past half decade. And you'll find rotations that had a guy in the very middle of the rotation that had walk problems but struck out like, you know, it's almost like Trevor Bauer, right, for the Indians.
Yeah.
Like similar stat line. So I think there is. Certainly, middle of rotation is like a decent expectation, even coming back from the injury, with some upside. I don't think you can pencil him in, or you should not be planning on him being a 2 or a 1. But a number.
How about closer of the future?
If command and control, if command and control are the last thing to come back to, and you're talking about some guy like Lamet, that's kind of scary too.
Well,
that's a longer road back like, for a guy that already struggled with command.
Let's not jack our dicks yet. Like he's coming back from Tommy John surgery.
That should be our tagline, by the way. Quintelligence.
It pretty much is. I mean, it is.
Yeah, it pretty much is.
Should put that
I mean,
on a shirt. I'd wear
I like Lamet. Like I liked him when he pitched, but I mean, I just thought the ace talk was a
shirt
little premature.
pair of boxers.
All right. So the other positive. I mean, if we're talking positives, you know, a lot of people say. You know, the position players coming up was a big deal, right? We got very excited for, Urias coming up, Mejia coming up.
That was
what did you guys think?
Yeah,
Mejia
I mean,
it's disappointing.
Mejia was certainly disappointing. I mean,
he had a great first
you definitely saw the talent, right? Like, some of those home runs he hit, you were like, Jesus.
Bat speed.
I've never seen a guy come up like from the
Potters.
Those
hands are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, I understand it. I understand exactly what people see, but... And part of this is maybe this is his chance, and he's been dicked around by Cleveland for so long that, yeah, I get it. And also, it's a very short audition, and essentially he's still put up what Austin Hedges did in a career year offensively.
I mean,
the same WRC+.
But
so.
Do you worry that the league will exploit him? Because, I mean, obviously, you watch some of those late at-bats in the season, and he swings at everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean,
literally swings
again,
at everything.
Again, he also has been given little chance. I'm projecting a little bit here, but he's been given little chance on a team that needed help at those positions, and he didn't get an opportunity to, and he's kind of dicked around. So they told him to take left field and then told him to play other positions. So I kind of get why he would be impatient coming up, and hopefully that'll be resolved. But yeah, that's incredibly worrying when you see a guy with these quick hands and great skills to be both a good hitter and possibly a power threat. It's concerning.
I said his bat speed and hands, it reeks of like Gary Sheffield. The way he does it reminds me of Sheffield, but then his plate discipline is like Pablo Sandoval, but without the ability to golf a ball that's like an inch off the ground.
He wants everything, but he's no Vlad.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah. Vlad.
Yeah.
Pablo's better. A little scary. I mean, now they fired the hitting coach. There's a new hitting coach coming in, whoever. I don't know.
Don't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No, I'm hoping that another year where they – I mean, this is the problem that I've always had is I don't see where he fits unless you split time. And I think it would be really great if you split time. You just said right from the onset of spring training, look, Hedges, Mejia, they're both going to be splitting time. It's as good for our team because we can play platoon splits or whatever, and that way he can learn the position without being a burden on the defensive value. And that way you have the offensive value from Hedges so you can kind of exploit what little you can get out of him.
Yeah.
And then you could possibly platoon Mejia in other positions. I get that. But he has to also prove that he's consistent as a hitter because now they've got corner outfielders that can just mash.
Yeah, his bat doesn't play well if you stick him in left.
No,
or
not at all.
Even third.
You have to you'd have to be really creative, and I don't know if he's open to that, which is why he's not in Cleveland.
Yeah, I think platoon is the right call next year at catcher. Yeah. Right. I think you have Hedges start against left-handed pitching, obviously, and then against righties they don't have a good breaking pitch, and then Mejia gets all the other starts, and I think you'll end up, it's almost like Grandal, Hundley all over again, except I would say maybe improved from a prospect pedigree.
Yeah, definitely.
The thing with Mejia though is. Yeah, obviously, the strikeout rate. It was one of those things where it was like every week you would get one fantastic Mejia highlight on Twitter where it's like, holy shit, look at these hands. Then you get six straight days of checking box scores where he goes 0-for-3 with a strikeout or two strikeouts, and you're like,
of pitches seen either.
No, but players can improve at strikeout rate. I mean, we saw that this year with Tatis in AA. Started the year out terribly in AA.
Oh, you mean the hill that you were going to die on?
I mean, I still think his strikeouts. No, I mean, I was just pointing out that it could be a problem. I mean, if I go back and read the tweets, I'm certain that's what was said.
It is a problem.
I mean, it still is a problem. It could be a potential concern going forward. But he certainly improved over the course of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing suggesting that a player can't do that at the major league level. We see it all the time. So
yeah.
I'm not overly concerned. I think if he came up and had average stats but didn't show anything from a talent perspective, I'd be much more worried.
Yeah.
Than the reverse. But it's just a matter of you need a manager and a plan that can make it all work together. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, this is
I don't have very much faith in that. But and that kind of ties into the whole thing with Hosmer, right? So, I think all of us agree with the math behind him needing to increase his launch angle, right? That if he increases launch angle, it would result in better, statistics for Eric Hosmer and a better experience for the Padres as the Eric Hosmer team for the next, 12 years, it feels like. So I guess my question really is, kind of segueing into coaching, who do you fault for this at this point? Do you think there is a coach or a manager that exists who could convince Eric Hosmer to actually change his swing? I know he's talked about it.
It sounds like he's open to doing it every year. It's the thing. He said it before this season.
But
he said, I want to be more consistent.
He always says the right thing. But the thing with Hosmer, you may have known, I don't know if you read the AC, the glowing AC articles that he wrote about Hosmer and how no matter how bad he's doing, he's always smiling.
I don't read Kevin AC articles.
you're supposed to read the article, Mark.
I don't read them.
Read the article.
Hosmer and AC both said, I'm going to go back to Florida and I'm really going to work hard this offseason. But that's code word for going. The thing with Hosmer is he doesn't have a professional swing coach. His swing coach, and this was brought up with the Royals as well, his swing coach is his brother, who's like a stockbroker or something. That's who he works out with on the offseason. And going back to Florida and working on things is code for going back and working with his brother. That's what he's done the whole time. You don't think Matt Stairs preached to him this year about launch angle? It's not a mystery to him. And, in fact, this is what he first yelled at Eno Saris about, is Eno was bringing up things like launch angle to him. He'll say the right things,
That's why he's a darling for the media and the clubhouse.
Yeah.
It's because he's an old school guy that says all these things that are incredibly popular with, let's say, fans or beat writers.
Casual fans.
And like, by the way, this isn't me slamming him. Like, I think that that's important to have some sort of element of that because obviously it's a boys club. So like, I'm not slamming that. But ultimately, when he says, I want to have a more consistent year, so I have two up years as opposed to one up, one down, and then he goes and does this for a season, he clearly didn't make any adjustments, as evidenced by his launch angle, which is what, average negative?
Negative, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's the worst in baseball. Like, yeah. So I think it was second. Yeah, you're right. But, oh, yeah, what was the worst? It's like some speedy guy like D. Gordon or something
like
that.
Yeah, I think it was D. Gordon.
Yeah. Which, yeah, the 9 walks all season. But anyway, so I think that he says all the right things, and this isn't a slam on him because that's important, but I don't think he's capable of adjusting. I don't think it matters what manager he has there. He's going to do his own thing. And that's ultimately why I thought it was a bad signing.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily agree with that. Like, right? Do you think that Hosmer enjoys playing baseball?
Yeah.
Do you think that's what he likes to do?
He's a lifer. He seems like a baseball guy.
I agree. I think that's what it is. And so what you can do is not play him.
Well, that's never going to happen.
That's never going to happen.
That's the problem.
Right, because the manager, I think the managers we have would not.
I'm not sure there are many managers that would bench him, though.
Right. And I guess that's part of the question. Can you get a manager who can effectively get him to do this? But I think if you just bench him and tell him, you do not play unless this changes.
Well, that's the thing. They had a suitable replacement.
If he likes baseball, then he will change.
Well, they did, but I agree with that. But what I'm saying is that they had a suitable replacement all year in Will Myers, who was more naturally a first baseman. And what happened? He tried three different positions, and they put him at third, and then he got raked over the coals for that. And meanwhile, Hosmer's here struggling the whole year, just looking like absolute garbage.
Hitting worse than Will Myers, too.
Yeah.
Far worse. Being unwilling to change.
Yeah, and so I don't think there is going to be a change.
I think that he's
got a solidified position in the lineup, as evidenced by Ron Fowler.
The rhetoric, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the rhetoric around the team. So if they were willing to have a manager in there that actually took a hard stance, or a hitting coach, or a GM even, and I don't think that's the way the structure of this organization works. So you'd have to change it from top down, I think, in order to get him to actually change.
I talked about this when he was signed. Like, there was all this talk when he was signed that, he's a ground ball guy, but, you know, he's going to come in and the Padres coaches are really going to coach him up and teach him the value of launch angle.
You don't pay him an elite salary to change.
Well, and think of it like a human. You're a guy who is being rewarded just – you're being very much rewarded for what you've been doing, and you can point to your history and say, what I'm doing works. It
exactly.
works well enough that you paid me $120 million or $150 million to come here.
Yeah.
Like, the psychology of that isn't what I'm doing isn't working. It's I need to go back to what I've done that worked before, right?
Exactly.
And what worked before is bad launch angle.
His super hit or miss swing.
Right.
Which, that's the thing, is I don't know if it can be fixed, because I think part of the reason he's so up and down is because that particular swing that he takes just has its ups and downs, which, for better or worse, that's what you're stuck with.
Yeah, and what it comes down to is he's not bad, I guess, at the plate. And maybe I'll ask you this in a bit, Marber, but, you know, his defense, according to DRS, is good. His UZR is very bad. Mm-hmm. And so according to Fangraphs, he's a negative value player. According to Baseball Reference, I think he's like a 1 WAR player.
Mm-hmm. That was like 1.816.
Maybe that's what he is, right? Maybe he's a 750 OPSing guy who plays the field poorly with mediocre power. That's not a losing player. Teams have won with – I mean, the Angels won with Casey Kotchman, right?
You can win with a bad player.
You can win with a bad player if you surround him with enough good players.
And we can get to this later, too. But, I mean, like, he's being used as a – this contract is now restricted is a restriction for us signing better players.
I mean, the Angels –
so that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, the Angels example is kind of bad because, I mean, not every team gets a World Series MVP winning Carlsbad High School alumni on it. Right? So that's just not very fair.
Oh, I just teed that one.
I didn't even know he went to Carlsbad.
Troy Glass, yeah.
Troy Glass. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean former Padres draftee?
Bastard.
Yeah, Troy Glass. Yeah, God.
Should have seen that coming.
Another one of those.
Hey, man, we get, like, beer leaguers out of my high school, so.
Ah, you got Cole Liniac.
Beer
leaguer
out of my
high school.
More than
La Costa Canyon. La Costa Canyon's got Mickey Moniak, and he's never going to smell the majors.
Oh, ouch.
Don't say that to Phillies fans, by the way.
He sucks.
I know this, late. But
I watched him. He doesn't hit. He has a great fielder, good
like
arm.
Matt Winkleman's the guy that does like the scouting for the Phillies. Or he has like a prospects blog, and he's like, he showed some improvement. It's like, oh, this is this sounds like Padres fans.
Yeah, sounds like us talking about like who was the first baseman we drafted from like Wake Forest that got hurt? Alan Dykstra.
Me and my brother's
and former
teammate.
Yeah, we'd be like, oh, but don't worry, he's got great bat to ball skills. He's really gonna turn
back.
It around. Yeah.
Hey, I watched his last. Me and David Rose watched his last home run at Lake Elsinore as a Padres prospect, actually, before he got traded to
Mets. Right.
Mets.
Yeah, the Mets, yeah.
Yeah.
To Sandy.
He's a reliever, I think. I think it was a major leaguer. I think we got a major
leaguer.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. Oh, crap.
I don't know. Some
was
bad.
Was that the Corey
Blaine Boyer.
No, Corey Mazzoni. Was that one?
Maybe. No, Mazzoni was Alex.
This was
the guy, that wore the helmet on the mound that we got from the Rays.
Torres,
yeah. Okay. I think Torres, yeah. Anyways, Bryant, you bring a good segue talking about the money because our Uncle Ron went on the radio recently, including on 97.3, the machine. After promising not to, went on there. But Uncle Ron basically threw water on our idea, many of our fans' hopes and dreams, that given that they are going into next year with, let's say realistically, they non-tender, let's say Brian Mitchell and Corey Spangenberg.
Sure.
You're looking at a $65 million payroll going into next year. Mm-hmm. That's filling it out with all the arbitration, paying all of the minimum salary players. You're looking at $65 million.
And even if they don't, you know, even if they bring back Mitchell and Spangenberg, that's like
you're looking
what,
at
72, 70, 70, 71, 71 million.
71,
yeah.
So Major League average, the mean, is about $138 million. We've always said, yeah.
Living on a prayer.
What are you spending on, right? There's only so much you can spend on. Mm-hmm. And so Manny Machado would talk about being, what, $30 million, 10-year, $300 million contract maybe.
Yeah, and they don't have Mike D's yacht charge on there anymore, so
yeah,
that's
I know.
The
slip
bill.
The slip fees are
yeah,
you know, off
are
the books now. So, you know, allegedly. So
they might still be on the books.
Uncle Ron said we will not sign a major free agent. He pulled the old. He sounds like he sounds like Jeff Morad, to be honest. Where
he's been
like
saying this since they signed Hosmer. I'm surprised it took people this long to clue in until he explicitly stated it after we got our hopes up. It makes no sense to me. But anyway, continue.
Wait, the acquisition makes no sense, or him being
no,
cheap
no, him
makes no
like
sense.
Ever since they signed Hosmer, he basically has gone on 1090, or like I think it was primarily Cilio, right? He used to go on Cilio's show before,
and he'd say
that, yeah, you know, this pretty much takes us out of the running for a major free agent if we sign a guy like this. And he reiterated it through the end of last season,
and then
into spring training, and like through April or May of this year. And now people are finally cluing in, like, oh, this $30 million guy.
Padres Twitter pulled the whole, this ownership is. You can't judge him off the old ownership
judge
group.
Judge
him this
on his
group
actual
spends.
Statements.
Even though this ownership group is part of the old ownership
ignoring that part, that, like, even if you, I mean, we've said it on the podcast, when you factor in what they spent on international, they never, even if you lump that in to the, comparing it to 25-man payrolls, they're still not at the mean.
No, not even close.
An unfair comparison because that's ignoring that other teams spend on international as well.
Yeah, and many of them also spent over.
Right.
Yeah.
So many
of them. That's comparing their basic salary to like everything we've ever spent.
And that's what I keep the media does. AC did this too, where he's like, well, you know, if you group in what they spent on the draft and on international and their payroll and their 40, even the Union Tribune did a comparison at the beginning of the season. You know how they do the thing where they put all the final roster and what they make? Mm-hmm. They put the 40-man roster on there. And compared the 40-man roster and people on the DL against 25-man opening day payrolls.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, the Padres are, you know, they're kind of, it's looking good. It's up.
That sounds journalistically dishonest of the Union Tribune.
Strange.
Yeah.
It's odd.
It's weird that they would do that.
Yeah.
So Uncle Ron has said no Manny. Obviously no Bryce Harper. AC actually wrote a piece last week, or I think it was in his mailbag late last week, where he said not to expect a signing even of the Eric Hosmer caliber, which is, you know,
frightening.
Mid to low $100 million. Where do you see it going? I mean, there's $65 million between where they're at and where the mean of MLB is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the team will never be good unless they are actually spending close to the mean, right? I think Tatis, Urias, if all these guys hit, which the odds are not in your favor of all the guys hitting,
Everybody.
I still think
yeah.
you're very far behind from being competitive. I mean, we talked earlier on the podcast about the starting pitching, right? And yeah. I think if we were super optimistic, LeMet comes back healthy, Pata comes up and is good, Lauer and Nix become back of the rotation, plus Lucchese, you're still missing a number one starter and probably a number two or number three. You're still missing a lot of starting pitching.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Or
pitching
trade,
is not cheap.
Yeah. Or trade assets, which we've worked so hard to build them up. And you're kind of banking on all those guys to be good to, you know, help you on.
You can't
spots.
You can't
so
bank
like
on everyone hitting and then trading away the someone
guys.
To get
yeah.
some actual value.
Yeah.
You have to either spend money and bank on everyone
well,
hitting.
Well, and the playoffs are going on right now. The yeah. Brewers are an interesting case study in that yeah. they are one of the most similar markets to San Diego in size, in TV money,
in uniform colors,
yeah, indistinguishable on the field.
Very yeah.
But the thing
sometimes I watch
the Brewers,
them and I can just pretend they're the Padres. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chacin looks like he's yeah. right there.
Yeah, they both have Julius Chacin on their team. Like, it's basically the same team.
It's kind of like we traded for Christian Yelich this offseason.
Yeah, almost. Except
I'm going to take that as a win.
Except we didn't.
But, like, the Brewers, since Bud Selig sold the team, like, their owner has openly said, I will spend more than what revenue will support.
Mm-hmm.
When yeah. the timing is right. And you've seen this team under his leadership trade for superstars, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trade for the MVP of the NL probably this year. And going back further, you know, he traded for Greinke. He traded for Sabathia. I
forgot about
Sabathia. He fields payrolls of $150 million yeah. plus, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I don't think Ron Fowler will ever field a payroll
nope.
of $150 million.
Well, he's on food stamps.
He is. He's hurting.
So you got to feed yourself first and foremost.
Look, I wasn't – when they signed Hosmer, I wasn't trying to bash it that Hosmer was a bad player. But you have to always realistically look at it like what could they spend and what is Ron Fowler actually going to spend.
Yeah.
And he's not – they're two completely different numbers. And so they could be the Brewers, but not with Ron Fowler.
No, I mean,
that's obvious.
And honestly, that's where my analysis of the Hosmer signing went wrong. I actually listened to that podcast the other day, and while I was driving my U-Haul.
Was I too angry?
You were not. I don't think you were too angry. But, no, so the whole thing was that I was okay with the signing, supposing that wasn't how they were spending all of their money, right?
And then did I suppose
130-140, right?
I mean, stating that you got to add players yeah. sequentially as needs come up. I thought Hosmer made the most sense last offseason, given his age and given, you know, that I thought he had some talent upside, you know, and that it would kind of maybe overlap more with when Tatis and Urias and et cetera were
yeah.
good.
Did I suppose that was possibly the last major signing at the time? And that it was silly to think that Uncle Ron would keep spending.
I don't think that was a major portion of your argument, but I think either way that you were more accurate, right, in terms of...
Well, I think I was a little more crude, now. Actually. If I remember correctly, I think I had a statement about how Ron Fowler just blew his load and that there were not more
that's,
loads
that sounds
coming.
More like
He's an
you.
Old man and that there
no,
were
think
not more loads coming.
Based on your MS Paint history,
I remember,
I'd say that's probably most accurate.
I think the main argument they were making is that you were disappointed also that Hosmer was going to be the guy that would be, you know...
The cornerstone.
Not even that. It's more like this is the first time that Fowler is going to sign a big money free agent. And
yeah.
I use big money kind of in air quotes because it's not really big money.
Yeah.
Media money.
For the Padres.
And if it goes well, maybe that'll lead to more signings. And if it doesn't go well, it's not going to lead. You know, there's a chance that Fowler goes, fuck that. I'm not going to do that again. And you were disappointed that Hosmer was chosen as that guy because there was a high likelihood.
He's a test
of
case.
He was a bad test case. I think that was
that's
really
a great way of putting it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I think that's, I mean.
Was I right?
It's hard.
Are you saying I was right?
It's hard to say.
Was I right, Marver? Were you wrong and was I right?
You are like hovering over your mic right now.
I would say it's hard to say that that's exactly the reason why they're not going to sign Machado. But if that has anything to do with it, then yeah, then Hosmer is an awful signing for that reason. Not even just
ignoring
the play on
the
field,
yeah.
just for the fact that now they're not going after more valuable players when they have money to go after them.
I don't think that's the reason, though. I think what the reason is, this was a way for them to stay relevant in a down year.
Mm-hmm.
They signed a guy because their general manager was obsessed with them from a scouting perspective.
Well,
like,
Ron
I think
Fowler
so
said he was the
things.
One that directed it
oh,
in
he
his
did.
Interview.
But I mean, like, who was obsessed with them since, like, August of last year? So I think it was just a swing and a miss from all perspectives. You can't have him as your test subject because he's so fluky. He seemed like he was being signed and given big money for reasons outside of his actual play. And it seemed like from the beginning an out to sign larger free agents later. It was just a disaster from the get-go, ignoring his actual play. Because so his ceiling's not that high anyway. It's, what, 4 wins, 4.5 wins?
So, wow, so like 4.5.
If for a second we ignore the absolute fucking bullshit that they're not going to sign big-time players this offseason.
And it is that. It is that.
It is.
We should all be in agreement with that. There is money there.
It is absolute fucking bullshit, right? We all agree on that?
And I see on Padres Twitter sometimes, it's like, you know, I think they're going to get up to $100 million. Hey, newsflash, guys. $100 million was a big deal in 2008. It is not a big deal anymore.
Not even. It was not a big deal in 2008 even.
It is not a big deal anymore.
They eclipsed that once, right, in 2015, and they quickly sold off everything. So by the end, their actual financial commitments were way below that.
Yeah, so to be fair, the next year, if you count in the penalty that they had, $40 million penalty on the international signings, they did go past $100 million.
Yeah. Pushes up glasses. They technically went over $100 million.
Because that's what it takes with them. And that's what AC loves to do. Any angle he can get. Now that we're forced to be realistic.
But who does that leave them? So obviously Machado's off.
Yep.
Harper's off.
Yep.
I'm going to go ahead and
say. You know who
has
a lot of war? Yasmani Grandal has 3.6 war. Hey, what about him? He's one of the highest war players.
I'm going to go ahead and say catcher's probably not on the agenda this offseason, right?
I would love it just to watch the implosion of Padres Twitter, but go ahead.
I would say first base is not on the agenda, and then I would say probably second base is not on the agenda.
So no Jed Lowry, because I actually didn't realize Jed Lowry was a 5-war player.
But let's
he
focus
had an
on
insane year.
Let's
and
focus
he's
on
a possibly a shortstop. Can he play shortstop?
Did he play shorter? He was mostly second.
I thought with
this
the A's
year.
He was a shortstop, though.
Simeon.
Hey, remember when you wanted to sign Zach Cozart last offseason?
Look, he got hurt.
All right, I was probably like in that boat, too, I think. Yeah, I think I was in that boat,
terrible,
too.
Instantly.
Well, hey, I was right on the Carlos Santana.
I think
one,
I like Todd Walker. I mean, I like Todd Walker, too. He got hurt, too, right? Or is it Todd Walker who's the guy that was on the Reds? Is that Todd Walker?
No,
Todd
no.
Walker's
no,
the guy that was on the Padres.
Cozart was on the Reds.
Cozart was the Reds guy. They went through
Frazier.
The Angels.
Sorry, Todd Frazier.
Todd Frazier, Frazier.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a very stereotypical Padres player where
he just
strikes out all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Miserable. But hey, I think the bargains this offseason are outfielders, and I don't think that's really in the cards for us.
How about this third base?
I
don't even know who this is. Eduardo Escobar.
The Twins.
Twins.
What about him?
Pretty good.
3.5 war?
Yeah, he's actually pretty young, too.
Well, he's 30.
I think that might be more like I mean, that's pretty young.
But you know what they're going to do? They're going to sign Donaldson. They're going to sign him, and they're going to trump up that he's a former MVP.
Well, they need a third baseman.
Well,
they do. I mean, he had 1.3 war last year.
But here's the thing. What kind of contract would you sign him to? 2-3 years?
What's he going to sign? 2 years?
No. The thing is, there's other.
What do you think he's going to get?
He's been injured all year.
You think he's a one-year guy? I think he can eke out 2 years.
I mean, no, I think he can eke out 2 years. I'm saying I don't think there's any necessity for him past 2 years with this franchise.
There wasn't a necessity for Hosmer, and he's here.
I have no idea. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, there are other teams that are going to be targeting these guys too, right? Like,
I also think that Donaldson's more of like a AL target just because he's injury prone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he kind of realizes that too.
I think, honestly, a more realistic approach would be. I mean, are we sold? I mean, how committed are we to Tatis being the shortstop?
We're all
not the third baseman.
His bat plays a lot better
at
short.
Honestly,
he plays better at short, and he can play it.
Yeah,
so here's the thing. Look at Correa. Correa got injured this year, and he's been garbage since in the second half. He's basically just been invisible. And I'm not saying that's the exact path that Tatis is going to take, but I think you have to assume, and I know that Oscar's going to hate me for this, that he's a future third baseman. And that's not me being mean. I just think that you play him out at shortstop as long as you possibly can until you start seeing a decline and then you move him over.
Right.
So, yeah, a commitment beyond 2-3 years at third makes no sense. So, yeah, maybe a Donaldson does make sense for like 1 or 2 years. If that's the way they're going to spend their money, whatever. They're not going to do anything for the next 2 years anyway.
But that just doesn't help you long term, right?
No,
like, I don't think we're going to be good next year or the year after.
I don't think he teaches anybody.
The year after that,
either.
If everything broke right, maybe. But like, still, that's a bad way to plan.
I think
so
this free agent.
Can't you imagine the commentary though? It's going to be Josh Donaldson's a real leader in the clubhouse. When you got an MVP trophy, you can teach
so
the young
many,
guys.
So many Mohawks.
But no,
in
but
that,
this is really my
clubhouse.
Question. If we're not going to sign Machado and Harper, the guys that you can see 3-4 years from now still being good, and not just good but potentially still stars 3 or 4 years from now, then what's the point of signing any of these guys? Like, the only guy I see on that list that I can squint and kind of see them being good 3-4 years from now is like Elvis Andrus at shortstop.
Yeah.
And it's not even clear if he's going to opt out of his deal.
Yeah.
So
Iglesias? What do you think of Iglesias?
Raisel Iglesias?
I mean, he's basic. No, Jose Iglesias,
Jose Iglesias.
The shortstop.
Oh.
He's a better fielder than Galvis.
Wow, I didn't realize
he's was a better hitter. Slightly, he's more valuable. He's younger. He's 29. But is he good enough that you move Tatis off shortstop? That was always my thing. Machado's good enough that you move Tatis off shortstop.
That's why shortstop's such a weird thing for me. It's like it doesn't make sense for.
And that's why bringing Galvis back doesn't make sense to me. Because I hear people being like, you know, he's so versatile, you can put him at second or third. Can you imagine his bat at third? Like,
it'd be garbage.
He's a black hole at shortstop, and that's acceptable because he's a good fielder. But you stick his bat at third base, and that's bad.
I mean, is he a Machado? Plus defender at even second?
We have no way to know. It's just this assumption.
That's why, like, that assumption was so. That's the same thing with Iglesias. Do we even know how he plays at another position?
Yeah, but the thing with Machado is, like, you don't even
have a big assumption.
Like every team should look at Machado and be like, this guy is more valuable than our entire, like, everyone on our roster. Like, you don't look at your roster and be like, hey, we have a hole at shortstop or third. Let's sign Manny Machado. It's more like, Manny Machado is 26 and is a free agent. All right, let's sign him, and then we'll figure
all
shit
money
out after that.
All, you know, money,
like,
goes there.
And that's not a type of thing.
Like, if it's the sort of thing where, like, Machado's like, I have to play shortstop, and Fernando Tatis Jr. is like, I have to play shortstop, and you can reasonably sign Manny Machado and afford him, all of a sudden you have the greatest trade chip in all of baseball named Fernando Tatis Jr. Like,
We have
two fantastic shortstops.
Exactly.
And the thing is, the best case of Tatis is, oh man, I hope he turns into Manny Machado. And then you're like, wait, we have the real Manny Machado.
We could sign him in his prime now.
Like, why would you move Machado? Like, he's already the thing we wanted in the first place. Mm-hmm.
It's nonsense.
You flip through the other, the other.
It's bad.
It's pretty mediocre.
I kind of like AJ Pollock, but obviously I don't think signing an outfielder is like
center
the
fielder.
Right way to go.
AJ loves Leonis Martin. He signed him from Cuba originally.
I don't have a problem with signing guys like that to like
3 years.
To pad that time between when they're going to be kind of rebuilding and competitive potentially. But that's the problem, is that you have the high end guys. Yeah.
So then I guess, you know, we've touched a little bit on shortstop and third. How about starting pitching? I mean, there's really three names that are available. Patrick Corbin, he's 29. He's coming off a great year. Dallas Keuchel and Clayton Kershaw. I mean, those are the only guys that are young and arguably very good now. I guess maybe David Price you can kind of squint at, but I don't think I'd really touch that.
Is he even going to opt out?
I doubt it. $127 million for 4 years. I don't think he'll opt out. So
it's a lot of old guys. I like Nathan Eovaldi, but I think his stock is going up because of his playoff performances.
But he's not like a needle mover anyways. You know what I mean?
I think
he
moves my needle.
I mean, I see Clayton Kershaw as potentially being a fantastic ad, right? Because you're also subtracting from your division opponents when you do that.
Right.
Corbin, I don't know. I kind of wanted to see it longer, but obviously you don't get that luxury because he's a free agent now and he's going to get paid now. Keuchel, he's always had great stats. I've never been a fan of his stuff watching him pitch, but like any of those guys would clearly be improvements, but they're all going to get a Hosmer-like deal, right? I mean, not the same length,
you
but the
really,
same money.
Really quick, you get into, you know, Trevor Cahill territory on this list.
That's not territory that you want to be in. How about Matt Harvey as a potential
As a buy low? I liked him. I wish they'd gotten him earlier, actually. He was a good buy low at the time. I you know, Eovaldi I like because he throws hard. He's got the stuff. He's the kind of guy that you can say maybe Balsley will fix him.
What about Drew Pomeranz? He's free agent.
I love Pom-Pom.
Yeah, I think he's a decent buy low, too. So there are some buy lows, but that's not what they need, right? They need...
Those are more threes and fours, right, in the rotation. Eovaldi maybe could be a two. Eovaldi actually has towards the top of the rotation stuff.
And none of those guys are guys that help you long term. I mean, they help you...
Well, Eovaldi's 29.
Yeah.
In the window, he could kind of be in there.
I guess that's the
only... But none of these... I mean, Corbin. Corbin's the other one, maybe, but...
Yeah.
He doesn't have the stuff of Eovaldi.
I mean, like, are any of these guys really long-term guys, though? This is, like you said earlier before we started recording, this is a top-heavy free agency.
Yeah,
like, this isn't really built for this team.
It is, so, and that's kind of why I think it's, like, it makes so much sense to get a Machado, right? Just spend everything on him. Like, if they spent $350 million on Machado and it didn't work out, I would never fault them for that.
No, because it makes sense based on their structure,
maybe,
their team
maybe
structure.
Maybe you fault AJ for making a bad choice. He should have had more information. But, like, as a fan, I'm going to be, like they tried. It didn't work.
It works for their current roster, too. That's the thing is, like, I feel that Fowler basically taking a dump on everything by saying we can't afford these people, which is obviously not true. Yeah. But doing that also puts you in this limbo where, like, well, now we target the second tier, which is really a third tier of players that are either has-beens or maybe fit a need for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you don't have anything in between.
Real quick, before my battery runs out, one name that came up in rumors that AJ has interest in, Marver, you're pretty familiar with him. It's Michael Franco on on the Phillies.
Yeah, I actually like him. I think he's been he was maligned by the Philly media for sure. So I think a lot of the stuff you see is kind of the same thing we saw with Grandal when he left. Obviously, Franco hasn't.
Oh, you mean being smeared unnecessarily by the local media?
Yeah, I mean, at least Grandal, you know, he did take steroids and stuff. There was like
I understand why people don't like him, but yeah, the degree to which they don't like him is
I understand
different.
A little bit more than Franco, but I actually kind of like his raw skill set. I'd be fine. I think it's a decent buy low. He was a big prospect, and I think he has
raw tools.
And it
depends on the price.
It obviously depends on the price, right?
And there's an actual need there.
Yeah.
Like, that makes sense.
I mean, I think I'd be willing to give up a pretty decent double-A starting pitcher for Michael Franco.
Like we said, 2019, we would like to be a laboratory year, right?
Yeah.
And seeing if you can reclaim Michael Franco, I think is a buy low. He doesn't have that much more control. Like, he's not actually a guy that would be there during the window.
No, but you could.
But he's a guy that maybe you could pawn off.
If he plays well enough, like, who knows? He's the kind of guy that you invest in when it's not going to be a great season on the field. Look, guys, the battery's about to run out. Let's close out really quick. Special thanks to Urge Common House here in San Marcos, possibly the new home of the Gwintelligence podcast. Not to take anything away from my beloved Ruler Brewing in Carlsbad, California, but, you know, thanks to Woe Doctor, we've got a nice setup here in the library. So we'll try to do this a little more frequently. Marver may not be here. His attendance has been shown to be really terrible. Would like to note that he's wearing tube socks and soccer slides here, so he really dressed the Inland North County part. Real quick, before the battery dies, just want to say, go Padres.